From KMOX Sports.
Okay, boys, here we go.
Welcome to the Grape Bar Sports Open Line.
Those mid swings, and he hits a drive. He hits a slammer.
Grape Bar, your distributor for electrical and datacom needs.
Here we go.
Now, Matt Pauly on America's Sports Voice, KMOX.
All right, man, let's get going here.
Here we go. Let's go.
We have arrived to Friday. Welcome in. It is a Grape Bar Sports Open Line right here on KMOX. My name is Matt Pauly. We're taking you for the next 2 hours till 8 o'clock this evening. As always, if you want to chime in on the program, you can do so. Call, text, tweet 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's where you call. That's where you text. You can also tweet at me, at Matt Pauly on air, M-A-T-T-P-A-U-L-E-Y on air. We'll keep you updated on a few things tonight. We're still more than an hour out from the Padres and the Dodgers getting underway with Game 5 of the NLDS. The winner of that game will go on to match up against the Mets in the NLCS. And then well after we are off the air this evening, the Blues are going to be in action. They are out west because they'll wrap up their three-game road trip to start the season. They take on the Golden Knights this evening. That's going to be a 9 o'clock puck drop. Last night was fun for the Blues. And that was a game that didn't get over until well after midnight. They forced overtime at like 12:08 a.m. And then it was a little bit after 12:10 when Braden Schenn scores the game winner. But that was, I'm the guy who's always pumping the brakes, right? I'm the one that when you're freaking out about the Cardinals 2 weeks into the season, I'm the guy saying, it's a long season. Let's see how this all plays out. And that's just always been the way I am, and it's going to be the way I always will be. I'm the slow play guy. I'm the take a step back guy. I'm the let's just assess the situation when the sample size is a little bit larger. All that being said, what we're seeing from the Blues, two games, tiny sample size. What we're seeing from the Blues, two games into the year, it's really good. It's really good. The fact that they have been able to fight their way back and show some character and show some resiliency and all those things. The fact that they're doing that early on in the season is great. You know, I thought that first win against Seattle was really good when the three goals in a minute 55 was impressive. But to me, what was actually more impressive about that Seattle win was the fact that they took a one-goal lead into the third period playing in a team's building on the first day of the season and did not give up a goal in the third period. Barely gave up a shot in the third period. Defensively just locked it down. That was what impressed me about the Blues in the first game. And then yesterday, they're down three goals in the third period. They very few times in the history of this organization have they come back to win a game that they had a three-goal deficit in the third period. They score three goals in that third to force overtime. They were able to get the extra attacker on right at the end of regulation to help them score. And then very quickly into overtime, they score. Braden Schenn scores, and the Blues come away with the win. No matter what else happens, this has been a very successful opening road trip. Going to be a tough one tonight. Vegas is obviously very good. You're playing in a back-to-back. But you know what they did yesterday was they went with Hofer in goal yesterday with the idea that you go with Bennington today in the tougher spot. Maybe Bennington steals you one. And you have just this amazing start to the season. We'll talk more about this as we go through the program. But I do think that I really like the fact that they're opening up the season with a West Coast road trip, because a West Coast road trip to open up the season, that gets rid of one at some point in the middle of the season, and those things can get you. Those things can get you. You go play three games in 4 days out west, that can turn into a really bad road trip really, really quickly, and I feel like it's mitigated a bit by being the first thing that you're doing, and now they've already collected two wins out of this thing. It's successful no matter what. They're in Vegas, and they're literally playing with house money tonight. I mean, this is a really good start to the season for the Blues. So I'm the guy that, 72 hours ago was telling you that I'm not real excited about this team. I don't think they're going to be especially good. I don't completely understand the excitement on social media, and I don't completely understand why there's a lot of people who feel like this team might be one of those sneaky good kind of teams. Not that I'm completely jumping onto that bandwagon quite yet, But I have really enjoyed watching what the Blues have done through the first two games and just the excitement that has gone along with it. The way I felt watching the game yesterday, we've all felt it as sports fans, right? Like we're really engaged in a game and our emotions are connected to it. Let me tell you, like I love the Blues. I'm generally not overly emotionally connected to the Blues on October 10th on their second game of the season, especially when expectations are not super high. But when they score the couple goals in the third period last night, and then all of a sudden they get the extra attacker, I was feeling it a little bit. I was really locked in on it. I was really enjoying it. It was an exciting moment when they tied it up. It was an exciting moment when they won the game. So really good start for the Blues, and that has been that's been fun to see. And I hope people have been able to enjoy it for sure. There was, of course, the complaining last night because it was not the easiest game to find from a TV standpoint. It was on ESPN Plus and on Hulu, That's the world we live in. Not everything is going to be on the same channel every single night. And if you were able to find it last night, you were able to enjoy yourself a pretty good finish. We've got a lot coming up on the program today. We'll talk Mizzou football. Gabe DeArmond's going to join us with Power Mizzou. He's going to be with us in about 5 minutes or so. Then later on this hour, we'll talk playoff baseball with Danny Vietti, part of the Major League Baseball team at CBS Sports, and also one of the hosts of the Wake and Rake podcast. Next hour, we're going to talk Illinois football. Jason Langendorf, who writes about Illinois for Sports Illustrated, will be with us at about 7:20. And then our guy Kevin Wheeler is going to join us in about an hour and 20 minutes. If you didn't catch it, I believe it posted today at STL Today, so it'll run in the paper copy of the Post-Dispatch tomorrow. I don't think it was in the paper copy today, but I could be wrong on that because I did not look at an actual paper copy today. But it is posted. I think it posted this afternoon at STL Today. Derek Gould wrote a really interesting story focusing in on the Cardinals' desire to have starting pitchers pitch deeper into games at the minor league level as a form of development, something that is not happening right now in Major League Baseball. And I think it's a really important step forward. We'll talk about that with Kevin. Again, that's going to be at about 7:35. If you want to join us, 314-436-7900, 314-436-7900. That's how you call. That's how you text. You can tweet at me as well, at Matt Pauly on air. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line here on KMOX. Welcome back into the program. Missouri football looking for a bounce back. They had a tough one last weekend when they went to College Station and lost to Texas A&M 41-10. How much can they really prove going to a not-so-good UMass team? Well, probably not that much, but to get more on that, we're very happy to welcome on to the program. He is part of the team at Power Mizzou. You follow them on Twitter at PowerMizzouCom. He is Gabe DeArmond. Gabe, thanks so much for taking some time with us today. How are you?
Yeah, no problem. Not bad. What's going on?
What can this team prove coming off the weekend that they had last weekend, obviously, that did not go well?
Zero. I mean, like, tomorrow means the only way we find out anything tomorrow is if it's, you know, a game in the second half. Mm-hmm. But other than that, look, this is one of the, I don't know, 10, 12 worst teams in FBS. Maybe a little better than Murray State, but they beat Missouri, beat Buffalo 38-0. Buffalo beat UMass 34-3. There's not much I'm going to find out tomorrow. Their next chance to show anything is a week from tomorrow against Auburn.
Was the only way that there would have been any value in this game is if they would have played it before Texas A&M, so they would have at least had a road experience before going to College Station?
I don't know that that would have mattered. I mean, it's literally UMass's stadium holds 17,000 people. I would imagine a third of that is going to be Missouri fans tomorrow that are making the trip to, you know, have some clam chowder and see the leaves in New England. I don't think it would have made a whole lot of difference. I don't really understand why the game is being played, but hey, it's there, at least there, but it's an easy win, and you go take it and move on.
A lot of people focusing in on what happened last weekend, but if you really take a step back, there were flaws against Boston College. They found a win. There were flaws against Vanderbilt. They found a win. And then Texas A&M happens. That's three straight games where maybe they've not put their best effort onto the field. How important is it, the value of this game, how important is it that just from a Mizzou standpoint, that they go out there and they, at the end of the day, they feel like they played well?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's maybe important for the players, right? Like, maybe it would do something for Brady Cook's confidence to go out and throw for 404 touchdowns, for the offensive line's confidence to not give up six sacks and 10 tackles for loss. Again, I don't think it proves anything, but I think the bigger point is kind of what you said. It's not just three straight games. We are now basically halfway into this season, and I don't really think Missouri's played well yet. So, you know, I started saying after the BC game, at some point, it sounds good to say, yeah, you're winning these games with your C game. But if that's the game you keep putting on the field, it's not your C game. It's actually your A game. That becomes at some point who you are. And right now, who Missouri is a very average football team that is ranked, you know, 18th in the country solely because it was ranked 11th in the country to start the season. Like, they've not really done anything that impresses anybody. And again, the next chance is going to be next weekend.
We had your colleague Gerard Hamilton on the program last week leading into the Texas A&M game, and he said something really smart that I've been repeating over and over and over. When looking at the how important that game was, and it's the same before and after, the rest of the schedule for Missouri, they've got an Alabama team that they'll play on the road. That's likely a loss. When you look at Oklahoma's schedule, there's certainly no guarantee that Oklahoma is going to be ranked when they play them coming up in November. That in terms of this team being a college football playoff team, possibly losing the way they lost to Texas A&M, it's hard to find spots on the schedule outside of Alabama that really get you back into that picture.
Yeah, it was hugely damaging, not because it was a loss, but because of the way it happened. But then, and I've said this a lot this week, we get tunnel vision on the team that we cover, right? And obviously, Missouri's was awful last week, and there's no sugarcoating that. But when you look around, the only team in the SEC without a loss right now is Texas. I mean, is Missouri losing in the fashion it did to Texas A&M worse than Alabama losing to Vanderbilt close? I mean, probably, but not by a lot. The point is, everybody in the country is like, there are going to be two lost teams in the playoffs. There's no question. Now, can Missouri be one of those? Who knows? There's a lot to play out between now and then, but I actually feel better today about Missouri's chances to get into the playoff at 10-2 than I would have felt last Friday. And that has nothing to do with Missouri. That has everything to do with everything else that's happened in college football. I mean, if you look at, you know, Tennessee lost to Arkansas, well, maybe that's not that damaging a loss, except the problem is Tennessee still has Alabama and Georgia left on the schedule. And if they lose those two at 9-3, they're not going to get in, you know. So there's only 9 unbeaten power conference teams in the country. 2 of them play each other this weekend. You know, Missouri goes and – I mean, look, if they win at Alabama, that obviously changes everything. But even if they lose at Alabama, even though they don't have a lot of impressive wins, I think we're discounting the fact that there might not be that many impressive resumes across the country. You know, and for this Missouri team, I legitimately think everything between 11-1 and 6-6 is on the table. I have no idea what to expect. And that's really true of most of college football. I mean, I don't know that we have any elite teams. And every year we start this thing in like week 2 of here's who would be in the playoff if it started today. And then 4 weeks later we look up and go, oh, maybe we shouldn't have done that because it was all just a waste of our time.
And to your point about Missouri being in the spot they are because of the preseason ranking, they're never going to get rid of preseason rankings, but at the same time, if you're up high, it's you're only going to fall so much where teams that, you know, I think of like a team like Pitt. Where would they be ranked right now if they would have been a preseason top 25 team as opposed to a team that had absolutely no preseason expectations? And what's really the difference between them and some other teams that have had good starts to the season? It's just all based off that preseason ranking.
And preseason rankings, really what they do is protect the team in them. Like, if you're Indiana, if you're one of these teams that nobody thought anything of, if you keep winning, you'll eventually get there, right? Like Missouri did in 2013 and 2007. Like, they just kept winning games, and eventually they got there. But if you are one of these highly ranked teams to start, it's really hard to fall, especially in a week like last week. Again, we know what Missouri did. If you look around college football, 14 of the top 34 teams in the country lost. That's nearly half of the top 34 in the country. So, I mean, yeah, you drop Missouri, but like you got to drop a lot of these other teams too.
When you suffer a tough loss, sometimes coaches like to make a big statement or, you know, really look at the depth chart and create competition and practice. As this game gets started tomorrow, do you think Tigers fans might see any type of a different look from a personnel standpoint?
I think we will probably see the exact same starting lineup we saw at A&M. Now, the benefit of this game theoretically should be that you should get a chance to play some more guys, right? And maybe you throw a guy in there tomorrow that, he hadn't done a lot. You don't really notice him in practice. And then all of a sudden he goes in a game and he looks pretty good. Like, maybe you find something, but I don't expect a big shake up in the starting lineup. That's honestly never really been Eli Drinkwitz's MO.
Gabe, before we get you out of here, a pretty big change here recently with Power Mizzou. You guys are now part of 24/7 Sports. I love that national service, and it's cool to see you guys move into that. I'm sure a lot of people who are listening are already subscribers to Power Mizzou, but just talk about it, if you can, this switch for you guys and what that means for people who take in your content.
Yeah, I was actually just texting with one of the guys that kind of was instrumental in us making the move today, and I said, it's been 11 days and it seems like it's been 2 months. We've been so insanely busy in the last week and a half, which is a good thing. But basically, if you just type powermizzou.com in your browser bar, you're still going to come to our site. And that was very important for us. I own that domain name. So Power Mizzou is Power Mizzou wherever it is. Our parent company has changed. It does mean you're going to have to buy a different subscription than you had. We're currently running a deal where you can have 30% off a year, or you can join for a month for $1 and decide if that's worth it to you. I hope $1 is worth it to almost everybody and they'd stick around. But for us, the move was made because, and it's been validated here in these first 2 weeks, the national network, the support we have of people covering college football and basketball and recruiting across the country is incredibly valuable. I mean, we feel good about what our staff does. What our staff does has not changed. We're doing the same things that we've done for 20 years, but we now have so many more resources that we feel like the $9.95 a month is going to be a lot more valuable than it's been the last few years.
The school that I went to made the fan site made that same type of switch a few years ago, going from your prior parent to 24/7 Sports. So I remember going along with that, and that was the moment that I was exposed to 24/7, and it is a fantastic content provider for sure.
Yeah, I mean, look, I'm sure eventually, like anybody's job, right, there's going to come a day where I'm like, hey, there's this thing I don't like. But through 11 days, no complaints and really happy. And the decision has been validated as the right one for us. And we certainly hope Missouri fans come along.
Awesome. Very good. Gabe, great to talk to you a little bit. Thank you for taking the time. Congratulations on the move with the site. And hopefully we can catch up with you again down the line.
Sounds good. Appreciate you guys having me.
All right, very good. That's Gabe DeArmond joining us here on the program. PowerMizzou.com is where you go. Fantastic Missouri coverage from the folks there. All right, we will take a break, and when we return, we'll talk playoff baseball. Danny Vietti from CBS Sports and the Wake and Rake podcast. He joins us in just a moment. It's a Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
We do continue here on a Friday night, taking these for about another hour and a half or so until 8 o'clock this evening. We're about 25, 30 minutes away from tonight's Major League Baseball playoff game. It is a game number 5 between the Padres and the Dodgers. The winner goes on to match up against the Mets in the NLCS. We're very happy to welcome on to the program right now. He is Danny Vietti, part of the team at CBS Sports, also co-host of the Wake and Rake podcast. You follow him on Twitter at Danny Vietti. Danny, thanks for taking some time with us today. How are you?
It's a good time to be live. Baseball playoffs are going on. We got football, basketball season starting up. It's a good day.
Yeah, it's a fantastic time in the sports calendar. How much have you enjoyed just not just these baseball playoffs, but some of these amazing moments? Like that, you just in a very short amount of time, there's so many moments in these playoff games that you can just recall immediately. Been so cool.
It's to the point where I'm almost forgetting a lot of them because there's just been so many. That's hard to keep track of. I mean, it really started with Braves Mets with that doubleheader that they had that was going to decide the three-way tie between those two teams and the Diamondbacks. And that first game where it was pretty much Braves for the first seven innings, and they went back and forth for the last couple innings, and then finally it was Lindor who hit the game-winning home run in the top of the ninth inning. Now, the Braves went on to win game two and knocked the Diamondbacks out, but that's really what started it all. And then since then, we've had the Alonso home run. We've had the Padres and Dodgers beef every single game. We've had more Mets magic, more Lindor magic with his game-winning grand slam in the last series against the Phillies. And I haven't even mentioned the fact that the Royals took down the Baltimore Orioles. Mm-hmm. The fact that the Detroit Tigers with a 33.2 million-dollar active payroll, they're still fighting on, and they're going to be playing a Game 5 against the Guardians. So, yeah. I mean, the storylines have been incredible. If anybody out there isn't watching the playoffs this season, they're missing out on some incredible, incredible entertainment.
Your top tweet right now is a quote tweet of something from August of last year where Max Scherzer said that Billy Epler said that the Mets were planning for 2025 at the earliest for the next competitive window. The Tigers were selling off at the deadline. So here you have two of the hottest teams going into the postseason and two teams that have made a nice little run here in the playoffs. And for the Mets, it was last year. For the Tigers, it was this year. Teams that had no expectations of anything like this even happening.
Yeah, and this is not anything new. You know, this has been going on for years in postseason baseball. In my opinion, it's the single closest event to the NCAA March Madness tournaments every single year, to the point where it's just completely unpredictable. Seeds are simply numbers, and when the games are played, the seeds go out the window. Last season, it was Rangers, Diamondbacks. Both were wild card teams. Certain teams that come to mind, like the 2019 Washington Nationals, they were far from the best regular season team. The San Francisco Giants, 10-12-14, they were not the best team in the regular season any of those 3 years. All of those teams wound up hoisting a trophy. The Tigers, Game 3 was a perfect microcosm of their success story. So Game 3, when they took a 2-1 series lead, this was, of course, before Game 4, now it's tied. But Game 3, the Tigers used six different pitchers. It was a Johnny Holstaff game, is like they like to call it. They used Montero, Herder, Breeske, Gunther, Vest, and Holton. Montero, Herder, Breeske, and Gunther, that's four of the six pitchers they used. They all started the season in the minor leagues. The only two pitchers that they used that didn't start the season in the minor leagues that game was Vest and Holton. Those two players were each claimed off of waivers in years prior. So they won a playoff game using six pitchers. Four of them started the season in the minors, and the other two were claimed off of waivers and released by other Major League Baseball teams. It's unpredictable. It's so funny because we constantly get asked these questions in July and August and even in spring training. Who's going to win the World Series? And I kind of say the same answer is, I have no idea. I could tell you who the best team is on paper in my mind, but it just goes to show that this beautiful sport of baseball is just completely unpredictable.
It is, and you know, you're on in St. Louis right now. I hope Cardinals fans hear what you're saying, because especially when it comes to pitching, if you can be smart about the way you do things and you kind of get lucky and you identify how to make players the best version of themselves, you don't have to spend tons and tons and tons of money. You can just go be smart and make players really good.
You're exactly right, and this is the hard part about it all. Is, you know, I was just talking about this with some friends and coworkers here. Is if the Tigers go on and have more success, and they, you know, they take down the Guardians and maybe even make it to a World Series, the hard pill to swallow for baseball fans is the fact that you can win, or at least get to a World Series, or at least have postseason success while having a low payroll. And fans don't want to hear that. Like, it's hard enough convincing these owners, yes, I'm looking at mm-hmm. Oakland, yes, I'm looking at Cleveland, yes, I'm looking at Tampa. It's hard enough convincing these owners to invest in a roster and invest into a ball club. It is possible to win games with a low payroll. We've seen Tampa Bay make it to World Series. We've seen Tampa Bay make it to postseason year in and year out, similarly in Cleveland and Oakland. But from a fan perspective, we want to see superstars on the field. We want to see free agency actually be a factor in what the team roster is going to look like. So as much as I'm rooting for the Tigers just because of the storyline and that the players are making miraculous things happen right now, there is a part of me that's rooting against the fact that a low payroll team could wind up having this much success in a postseason because it could disincentivize front offices from spending money.
No, it's a great point. And I know I sit here and accentuate the idea of teams being able to not spend a lot of money and be successful. I appreciate the intelligence that goes along with that. But I also, at the same time, agree with you that you want to see teams spend money, and that's a hard place to be. If we could sit here and have the confidence that owners across Major League Baseball were always going to go all in and always spend as much money as they possibly could, I think at that point it's easier to look at the situations where a team might be in a rebuild and they're able to get the most out of a low payroll and appreciate. So I think that's a really good point by you.
I think there's a balance just like anything, right? I mean, last season we saw the Mets with the highest payroll in Major League Baseball. They didn't make the postseason. We saw the Dodgers get ousted early on in the postseason. They had the second highest payroll. The San Diego Padres, I think they were fourth last season in payroll. They did not make the postseason. And I think, you know, despite not having the World Series, albeit the 2020 60-game season, the Dodgers not having the World Series success, I think the Dodgers are the perfect example of a team that does it in all different fashions, from the farm system and developing players while also spending money in free agency. I think there's got to be a balance. If you go all in on payroll and you're not developing players, you're going to look a lot like the 2023 Mets or the 2023 Padres. But if you can combine both sides of the coin there, develop players, spend money in free agency, and then you add some culture in between there, that's the recipe for success, at least in my mind.
How much of a failure is it? We've been sitting here talking so much about the randomness of the playoffs, but at the same time, it's a Dodgers team that won the COVID year World Series, has not won beyond that, and it feels like if they were to lose tonight and get knocked down in the divisional round, as crazy as this might be, considering how many games they win, that they may have to look internally and see what kind of changes they would have to make.
We could do the hypotheticals. We could. I don't want to go there. Can we recircle this till after tonight's game?
Because
we could do the whole sound the alarm. It's been a failure. What are the Dodgers to do with Dave Roberts? What is his front office going to do? We can absolutely play those cards at the end of tonight if the Dodgers end up losing. But I don't want to start those conversations because the Dodgers are at home. The Padres have all the momentum in the world. Yes, they do. And a lot of people are actually riding that wave right now. But the Dodgers lineup is still really, really good. Mookie Betts is getting fiery right now. Freeman is back in the lineup tonight, albeit not quite healthy. I just don't want to sound the alarm yet on the Dodgers and call them a failure until I see tonight's game and I see how it plays out.
I think the Dodgers win tonight, so it becomes somewhat of a moot point if that happens. But
there you go.
Yeah. Last thing for you before we get you out of here. You've been pretty vocal about the Oakland situation, and they're done there. I know you're really locked in and connected to what's going on. The challenges that are going to happen in Sacramento and Vegas? Like, is anything really, other than the fact that they're going to play in Sacramento last year, do you really feel like anything is settled with Oakland moving forward?
Nothing at all. I the shovels haven't hit the ground, at least in Vegas. The only thing that's settled is the guarantee that they're going to be playing in Sacramento this next season, the season after that. And it's likely looking for a third season as well, although it's still kind of tentative. But there's a guarantee of at least two seasons that's going to be played in Sacramento. Other than that, Vegas, the shovels have yet to hit the ground. There's still a lot of political stuff that's going on in Vegas that, you know, includes tax paying money. How much will John Fisher pay for the stadium? Because he doesn't want to pay a dime. He, of course, wants Las Vegas taxpayers to pay for the stadium. The stadium's location has changed plans multiple times. I've been fooled by this ownership before, and I'm not going to allow myself to be fooled again. Don't believe what John Fisher and this ownership group says on camera, because we've seen time and time again it not exactly work out the way they say. So the reason I say that is, if the Sacramento A's were still playing in Sacramento, California in 2030, I wouldn't be surprised.
It's not a great situation for Major League Baseball. Danny Vietti, you listen to him on the Wake and Rake podcast along with Will Middlebrooks, part of the team at CBS Sports as well. Danny, thanks for the time. Enjoy the game this evening. It's going to get started here in just a few minutes, and hopefully we can catch up again down the line.
Fired up. Let's do it. Have a good one.
Very good. You too. That's Danny Vietti joining us, one of our favorite folks to be able to talk baseball with. Yeah, this game tonight, I think the Dodgers are going to win. They are favored in this game. They're -145 favorites compared to the Padres, who pay at +120. I think the Dodgers win tonight, and then I really don't know what that I don't know anything about anything. Like I have no leaning whatsoever on tomorrow's Detroit Cleveland game. I feel like the Yankees are the likely team to come out of the American League to go to the World Series. But whether it's the Dodgers or the Padres matched up against the Mets, I don't have much of a leaning on that either. And I could be wrong on all of it, because this postseason has just continued to show that it's very, very random. All right, one more break. We'll come back. We'll wrap up hour number one of the program. This is the Graybar Sports Open Line on KMOX.
Welcome back to the Graybar Sports Open Line. Once again, Matt Pauley on KMOX.
Starting to wrap up hour number one of the program, and hour number two, we've got a couple more guests that are going to be on. Jason Langendorf is going to join us. We'll talk Illinois football with him. They've got a game against Purdue coming up tomorrow. Really need to win to stay in the top 25. And then our guy Kevin Wheeler is going to join us at about 7:35. With him, we're going to discuss something that was written by Derek Gould today in the Post-Dispatch and STL Today regarding the Cardinals focusing on starting pitchers in the minor leagues pitching deeper into games, which I think is a really good and important thing. The Cardinals, as we've talked about with Heim Bloom, overseeing the redevelopment of the minor league system, it feels like in many areas they've been passed by other teams. But as we've watched a trend of organizations really putting kid gloves onto minor league players, thinking, but I don't think thinking correctly, but thinking that it'll help save them from injuries, that it's done kind of the opposite. So I'm really glad to see that the Cardinals are taking action in this area, and it really worked this year. They led the four levels in innings pitched from starters. So it was something that they planned to do and that they were effectively able to do it. Also, quick note for you, coming up on Monday, I know that's a few days away. You got to get through the whole weekend, but just keep this in the back of your mind. We're going to have another roundtable where it's going to be Tom Ackerman, Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, and myself. We're going to do that on our social media channels on Monday. That is scheduled to begin at 12 noon on Monday. So whether you follow KMOX Sports via Twitter or Instagram or the KMOX Sports YouTube page, which you should be subscribed to. And there is a difference between KMOX News and KMOX Sports. That's notable when it comes to all this. But just follow along with KMOX Sports, and we're going to have another sports roundtable again with led by our guy Tom Ackerman. And it's going to be Kevin Wheeler, Bernie Miklas, and myself. That's going to be coming up on Monday at noon, and hopefully you'll be able to be tuned in for that. I found this to be interesting. Ole Miss is going to address complaints about fake injuries with players. They have been in contact with the SEC and also the National Coordinator for Football Officiating. South Carolina, who Ole Miss played last weekend, was really upset because it seemed like any time they got some momentum, all of a sudden what would happen? An Ole Miss defensive player would stay down on the field and they would be injured. So Ole Miss acknowledged that their team had received attention. In a statement, they said, "We have also updated the SEC office, and our head coach will communicate with our coaches and players to ensure we conduct ourselves properly and are compliant in this matter." Not saying that it's not true. They did not deny any of the accusations, but let's also be very honest about this. Every team has probably done this at some point in time. When it's getting noticed, it's probably crossed some sort of line that you're doing it more often than not. But in every sport, if faking an injury can help you out a little bit, slow down the other team, I think teams, I'm not for it, but I think we would be naive to say that that doesn't happen maybe more often than we all realize. All right, 1 hour down, one more hour to go. We're back with more of a Graybar Sports Open Line in just a moment right here on KMOX.